Welcome to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. I'm John Cook, and I am joined today by John Herman, U.S. Rate Strategist for MUFG. It's Wednesday, July 29th, 2020. Welcome back, John.
Hi, John. Great to be back. Thank you.
As readers of your research may know, you are forecasting a less terrible decline in U.S. growth in the second quarter and a more robust rebound in growth in the third quarter. That, on the face of it, sounds pretty good, but based on our conversations, I know that isn't the whole story. What would you tell our listeners ahead of the release of the advanced reading of Q2 GDP Thursday morning?
You know, we think there's a lot of really subtle mathematics going on between the second and the third quarter and into the fourth quarter. And it may take us more than one podcast to communicate it to our client base and to get everybody on the same page and have them, you know, continue to read our research closely. But basically what's going on is this. The way we see it is during the second quarter, we obviously had a big hit to consumption, to business spending, to even the housing market, and also to inventories and the trade drag worsened. But there's a weird pattern. Most of it was concentrated in the months of March and April, which made really pulled down the average of the second quarter. But then, as even Chair Powell noted today, you know, the May and June rebound was really pretty strong. So the trajectory coming out of that bottom was really pretty steep. And that trajectory, okay, GDP in the second quarter may be down, as we're saying, minus 32.5%. The street's, you know, around minus 35%, so maybe. But what it means for the third quarter is that the steepness of that trajectory coming out, even if the third quarter activity basically stays flattish, or in our models, for example, we have consumption weakening in the months of July, August, and September, each month successively. We have it weakening, and yet still we can hit 19% consumption growth for the quarter, which puts GDP in around 24%, given a statistical rebound. Also, for example, in inventories. So the third quarter is going to look pretty good still, even though we're you know, people are developing concerns about it. But it's going to be looking good because the statistical momentum is just so strong in between the second and third quarter. So again, that will be for inventories, that looks very good, for consumption, personal consumption, looks very good, and also for the housing market. For those three areas, that's what gets GDP close to 20% Q on Q in the third quarter. But all of that good momentum fades over the third quarter. So when you come into the fourth quarter, our model's base case is that GDP grows only 1.8% in the fourth quarter, consensus 6.5. But we do have some simulations that are reasonable where GDP is only 0.5% in the fourth quarter, 0.5. So again, down 32.5% second quarter, up about 20 to 24% third quarter, but our base case of 1.8% forward, but we have simulations only 0.5% fourth quarter. So if you're the Fed, you should be getting pretty nervous right now.
Yeah, that does not sound great. Well, switching topics just a little bit, Q2 GDP is obviously not the only big event of the week. The FOMC just concluded its July policy meeting. Why don't you break it down for our listeners? The policy statement itself seemed pretty straightforward. So I guess the real question is, what about the press conference? And more specifically, how did Chair Powell's assessment fit with previous guidance from Fed staff that we saw in the June FOMC meeting minutes, as well as your own outlook?
So this sounds like a very long question, but it's kind of actually pretty concise. So the only thing, you know, the Fed didn't roll out any new policies at this meeting. Chair Powell argued that, hey, we still are in our policy review process. We still have not been able to deliver upon an update on the statement on longer run goals and monetary policy strategy. So that's still underway. He's suggesting that they could complete that project on the statement of goals and monetary strategy, policy strategy, by, you know, maybe the September meeting. But we would suggest to the Fed, really don't drag your feet too long. Because number one, you know, again, given our trajectories for the economy, the fourth quarter really looks pretty weak. And if you're going to need to take some action, as Chair Powell was suggesting, they need to have that statement on goals and policy strategy. They need that finished and completed. And that most likely is just going to only do but just codify all of the actions that the Fed has done and combine that with their longer run outlook on the economy, which is that, you know, essentially this shock that hit the economy, this pandemic shock, is basically a disinflationary shock. So moderate inflation going forward after you strip out base effects, for example, moderate inflation, moderate growth, and a long road to the recovery. So that's what Chair Powell seemed to, his comments comported with the Fed staff. The Fed staff, I thought, did an outstanding job of synthesizing the growth outlook with the inflation outlook, with the employment outlook, and the shock and the implications for interest rates at the June 10th meeting. And in that, Fed staff came out and said, and I thought this was an incredible sentence because I've never seen anything like this in my 26 years of Fed watching and Fed following. But they came out and they said, and very powerfully, they said, the staff simulations suggested that the committee would have to maintain highly accommodative financial conditions for many years to quicken meaningfully the recovery from the current severe downturn. So, you know, to hold the policy rate at the effective zero lower bound for many years, the Fed staff is saying. And these are, you know, basically some very model-driven, fairly conservative, fairly buttoned-down folks who are saying this policy rate has to be at the zero lower bound for many years in order to meaningfully push the recovery out of this severe downturn and restore kind of a normal economic environment. And Chair Powell today, what he said was, he said, look, we need accommodative policy for an extended period of time. And then he checked himself and he said, for a very long time. So now Chair Powell, his assessment, maybe the Fed staff is a little bit ahead of Chair Powell and Vice Chair Clarida. Maybe they were a little ahead of the Fed back in June 10th. But now perhaps Chair Powell's coming around, and maybe, you know, it may take him another 6 weeks to come around more fully at this by the September meeting. But again, our outlook and our forecast for GDP and so on over the second half of this year and through most of next year, even should a vaccine arrive, in December, January, as we go, is still underwhelming enough that we would suggest the Fed has to really reload on the ammunition, get ready to do some more stimulation.
As you said, that is pretty straightforward. So, kind of on that last point, perhaps the most interesting thing about the meeting was what the Fed didn't do. You know, Chair Powell told us that the Fed continues its policy review, and that he expected the process will wrap up in the near future. What should our listeners expect to see in that document, and how does that affect future potential policy actions like, for example, yield curve cap or target policies as they did back in the post-World War II era?
So in the statement on longer run goals and the review of the policy frame, this is really important, but it's basically going to give you sort of a decade look ahead at how they see the contours of the economy evolving this decade. What are the peculiar features and challenges to the economic environment this decade, and what are the implications for monetary policy strategy? And the real tricky part is, if we had a normal environment and interest rates were 6% and we hit a slowdown, we cut the rates from 6% down to 3% and then, and so on and watch the economy recover. This time around, here we are, we're at the zero lower bound. It sounds like we don't have too much wiggle room. How do you, if should the economy need further stimulus, what is the optimal strategies? What are the optimal choices that the Fed can make to help promote their, meeting the dual mandate of maximum employment on the one hand and price stability, 2% inflation over the cycle on the other? And as Chair Powell acknowledged today, this pandemic shock is primarily a disinflation shock. So if you put an outlook on average inflation, stripping out the base effects, for example, you may not hit a 2% inflation for, 4 or 5 years at this point. If you tie it to an unemployment rate, Again, we have just some nervousness over, as the Fed does, over the labor force being weakened. We worry about not enough fiscal stimulus and so on, and you know what that may do to people who are searching for jobs and the like. And so an unemployment trajectory or path or commitment to the unemployment also would sort of suggest, you know, 4 years of a zero interest rate. And then Fed chairs just opined today and he said, you know, he said, that doesn't seem much difference to me if I just came out and just said, I'm just going to keep rates low for 4 years. I'm just going to give you a calendar date time commitment on policy and so on. So we would agree with all those things. They're all, and even the Fed staff said, you know, when they wrapped up their study, they said, look, they're all about the same, because they're all suggesting that the policy rate is going to be at the effective lower bound for close to four more years from now, which is really kind of earth-shattering message to hear from the Fed. And so they're all not a yield curve cap is just such a forceful, especially if you put on a 3-year note and say, okay, 3-year note yields will not rise above 30 basis points or 27 basis points for the next 3 years. That is just a really forceful, and what the Fed staff suggested, it not only succeeds in anchoring the front end rates, but it also succeeds in eliminating volatility in the front end that could, you know, unsettle from time to time the pace of the recovery and the speed at which we get back to a normal recovery. So that's what the Fed staff, that's why I think the Fed staff analysis is so good. And they were basically giving some endorsement to the cap strategy. What I thought was so impressive is that, yes, their conclusion is that for 4 years or so, these rates are going to be at the effective lower bound. Fine. But the Fed staff was also saying, we want to eliminate volatility in the front end. And the most powerful way to do that is to basically put a cap on, say, a 3-year note yield. And that's the most, because that will just simply eliminate any kind of market tendency or any kind of movement to break through those levels and be disruptive for a period of time. And as the Fed staff argued, they said, we don't want to have the market price in a premature withdrawal from this low rate environment. And he said, that's what we saw back in 2011, 2012, 2013, and also with the taper tantrum in 2013. We had the market make that kind of violent move, and it was not optimal, and it was a bad timing for it, and it was disruptive. And it's not, so they don't want that volatility either. It's not just the low rates, but they want to eliminate the volatility. So we've gone actually on a little bit too far. Lots of time to opine on these things, but really very, very, very interesting week. The minutes should be astonishingly cool to read in 3 weeks' time.
Really good analysis, John. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, John.
Thank you for listening to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and reach out to your MUFG sales rep for any further information. Check back soon for more insights from the Global Markets Research Team.